What is it that you guys do? What's your offering in the marketplace?
So we call ourselves the little agency that roars, because we like to say that we're big enough to get the job done, but we're small enough to do it right. So we don't have layers of management, no layers of fees, no price minimums. You get to work directly with the people who own the agency. There really isn't anything we don't do. What we're known for is handling local and regional clients. We don't do a lot of national buys or national creative. That doesn't mean we don't do some occasionally, but most of what we do is going to be local or regional.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell, from the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome back to the Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having on the line Michael Fasoni. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. I know before we got on, we were chatting, you're in Kansas City, is that right?
Correct.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. I always start these shows off by doing a brief introduction for our audience who may not know who you are. So I'm going to go through your bio real quick, and then we'll dive into your story. So Michael is the managing partner at Fasoni & Partners, a full-service advertising agency based in Kansas City, Missouri, founded in 1975. Michael's career in advertising started out as a production assistant while working for his father, Michael Fasoni. From assistant to full-time producer and copywriter, Michael eventually grew into the business, transitioning from production to sales and account management. After 14 years of working for his father, Michael and his business partner, Carol, would have equally take over. Did I say that wrong? Carol would take over Fasoni & Partners while their founder entered retirement. So 25 years later, Michael continues to push himself and those around him for the freshest creative ideas, the smartest media strategies, and of course, the next big idea. So with a background in art, architecture, and his own podcast, Michael is as media and art diverse as he is passionate. So the perfect combination of agility and experience, fan of the unique and awesome and taboo subjects, but mostly here to inspire creativity in media, creativity in business and life. So that's quite the introduction, and especially being a second generation owner of a business, it's fascinating to see. You know, where they say most businesses don't make it past the first couple of years to be in a business that's going on generation number two. I always like to start off with what you're known for. What is it that you guys do? What's your offering in the marketplace? You know, just tell us that to start with, I guess.
So we call ourselves the little agency that roars, because we like to say that we're big enough to get the job done, but we're small enough to do it right. So we don't have layers of management. No layers of fees, no price minimums. You get to work directly with the people who own the agency. There really isn't anything we don't do. What we're known for is handling local and regional clients. We don't do a lot of national buys or national creative. That doesn't mean we don't do some occasionally, but most of what we do is going to be local or regional.
Nice. And what kind of companies do you usually do work for? Is it, is there a specific industry, or are you guys across the board?
It's everywhere and everything in between. It's B2B, it's B2C. We're probably right now, let's just say a safe number is 20. We're probably in 20 DMAs at any given time, designated market areas. You know, instead of saying 20 cities, we're in 20 markets.
Makes sense. And just all over the place. So how big of a company are we talking? Are you guys, you know, small team, 4 or 5 people, or you got like 100 people? How big is?
No. We're 10 strong.
10 strong. And I just operate all over the place. So I always like to start off with your origin story. And we heard a little bit of in your introduction, but your origin story is every superhero has their origin story, right? It's the thing that made them into the hero they are today. And we want to hear that story. Were you born a hero, or were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to, you know, take over your father's business? Or did you start in a job, which I know we heard a little bit of that, and made you want to become an entrepreneur? But basically, where did you come from?
I came from Kansas City. I've born and raised in Kansas City, but this was not planned, my entry into advertising. I thought I was going to be an architect. when I realized the amount of math and science that involved, that became a big turnoff. And I was introduced at an early age to commercial production, video production specifically, and I really took to it. And then from there, as you read in my bio, production leads to actually, you know, being a production assistant, led to actually producing, led to handling accounts, then transitioning over to the sales side.
Nice. And so for our audience who may not be super familiar with the advertising world, can you talk a little bit about what those things mean? Like, what do you mean when you say producing or production assistant when it comes to advertising?
Absolutely. So, and when I started, this was I don't want to say pre-technology, because technology has always been around, but it was pre-smartphone. It was pre almost even email. You know, we're talking 2000, 2001, where if you were running dubs, station dubs to go on air, or dubs for approval for your client to see their spots and approve it, no matter what it is. If it's long format, short format, audio, video, you would do those on VHS or Betamax.
Nice.
And hand deliver those to your client before email existed. So as a PA in my first days of advertising, I would arrange props for shoots, call studios and book talent time, confirm talent time, show up and just gopher, do whatever I was needed to do, empty trash, answer phones, you know, your typical production assistant job, moving sandbags, you know, assisting with script edits. Not allowed to do any script writing at that stage, but certainly allowed to do some simple edits, stuff like that.
Nice.
That's your production assistant stuff. It's, you know, you have producers, directors, directors of photography, you have cameramen, you have grips, and then you have people off to the side that go and get sandwiches. They go and make sure that everyone's on time, go and, you know, go and do a lot of those things that we take for granted sometimes.
Yeah. So when you're talking advertising, you're talking like legitimately the big ads that people might see on like the Super Bowl or on the local television stuff. Is that right? What we're talking about for advertising?
Yes. Legitimately big ads. We do legitimately big ads.
So do you guys do any of the, I know with the way that the world has moved, more of the, you see more of like the YouTube video ads nowadays or Facebook ads, anything like that? Or are you still doing exclusively like television and radio?
We're running Facebook campaigns, Meta campaigns, in other words. We're running YouTube campaigns. YouTube has a great ad model. Between YouTube and YouTube TV, those are two great places to put ad dollars, along with all your streaming services. Hulu is another great place. OTT, over-the-top television, which is an ecosystem that combines all of the streaming channels that are free into an ad model that we can buy for on behalf of our clients. So if you're streaming from a Roku or a Fire Stick or direct from the network or from a Samsung smart TV, capturing all those impressions as well and being able to serve them. So no, it's not just old-fashioned linear television, network television or feed television. It's streaming, it's internet, it's everything.
So do you find that you have to produce a different ad if you're depending on whether or not you're going to YouTube or the streaming services or, you know, traditional cable? Or can you use the same media?
You want your creative to be the same, because you don't want your audience to see your product and image in a different manner than they're seeing it in somewhere else. So for consistency's sake, you want the same ad. Now, if your frequency is so high, we just had this conversation last week with an attorney. If your frequency is so high, advertising is reach and frequency. It's two things. Mm-hmm. If your frequency is so high, you know, those commercials that you see every minute and a half, well, then you want multiple creatives running, because your audience, the consumer, is going to get real burned out real fast seeing the same commercial every minute and a half. You know, that's not fun for anyone. You know, you get a bad taste as a consumer, and as the advertiser, your advertising loses its effectiveness when it just glosses over you.
Yeah. So I'm curious then, like, I know depending on the network and like where you're producing the ad, like you have different opportunities for calls to action. Like when someone's watching on YouTube, they're generally like holding their phone or their laptop, and they can respond to a call to action by like clicking on it. But if they're showing up on like on their streaming device on the TV or on cable television, your calls to action are, you know, you have different opportunities for those. Do you guys switch calls to action out, or do you guys use something that works across the board?
That's a good point. You know, sometimes we do utilize like a QR code. Mm-hmm. That kind of directly answers your question a little bit. because you're right. You know, the phone isn't always readily available. And if you're watching on screen, like we're watching everything on the screen, but if you're watching it, you know, YouTube on a tablet or a laptop or a smartphone even, and the same goes for Hulu and other streaming services. Those are all, when you look at the post-buy reports, 60 to 80% of your impressions are being served on mobile or tablet. The smallest majority of your impressions are being served on desktop.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you've gotten to, you know, sort of play in all the different categories because you started off at the bottom and sort of worked your way up to owning the company here. I want to find out what your superpower that you've developed over the course of your career here is, right? Every hero has a superpower, whether that's their fancy flying suit made by their genius intellect or the ability to call down thunder from the sky. You know, the real world heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or you developed over the course of your career that really energize everything that you do. And so the way I like to frame it for my guests, if you look at the course of your career and all the things that you, the skills that you developed, there's probably a common thread that ties all those skills together. And that common thread is probably where you'd find your superpower. So with that, what do you think your superpower is as, you know, the head of the company now?
Man, you should have given me some warm-up time on that question, Richard. You said my zone of genius. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, the zone of genius.
My zone of genius. What is my zone of genius? You know, I like what was written there in the bio, the combination of agility and experience.
Yeah.
Because I think that's important in our industry, and that's important to have when you're in advertising, working on multiple clients in multiple industries. You know, we're not a large agency, which means we do a lot with a lot of different types of companies versus a larger agency. You may only work on one category of one client.
Yeah.
You know, if you're working on McDonald's, for example, at a large agency, you probably don't work on all of McDonald's. You only work on the beverage division of McDonald's, or you only work on the appetizer menu layout division of McDonald's. Here, you're going to work on a local HVAC dealer. Then you're going to jump over to a kitchen and bath remodeler. Then you're going to jump over to a casino advertiser. And it keeps things interesting. So I would say my zone of genius is, and my super skill, I'm going to say creativity, Richard.
Yeah, and that creativity comes from just having access to playing with a lot of different markets, right? Being able to like cross-pollinate the ideas and what
works. It doesn't hurt because you know what's working in other markets and you know what other markets are doing.
Yeah.
Not just from a media standpoint, because we're media and creative. They both have to be 100% right. But you see different flavors from different parts of the country. And it's amazing how similar really every market is, but yet how some markets that you may think like a larger market, like in California somewhere, because we do a lot of work there. You can see that on our website. But at the end of the day, when you're producing a car dealer commercial in California, it's no different than producing a car dealer commercial here in Kansas City. We're all human. We're all the same type of person, you know, in every state, no matter what we're doing, even though we may talk a little bit different and be in different time zones and have different climate. At the end of the day, we're all looking for the same thing, results.
Yeah, absolutely. I know one of the things I've always found interesting, you know, my audience knows this, we travel full time. So we go state to state and city to city pretty regularly. And you'll find that you mentioned car dealerships, and in particular, car dealerships will have, you can always tell which car dealerships are using like the same advertising agency, because the messaging will be like the same. Because if it works in California, it works in Kansas City, and it'll just like the same ad, except it'll be with a different, what'd you call them, a different dealership.
And that's common. You hear the same voice, same voiceover, similar graphics, similar editing styles. You travel all over for the podcast?
I travel all over because we travel and we run the podcast while we go, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You guys just travel for fun.
We just travel for fun. Yeah. We've been, you know, technology allows us to travel, so we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
You and your family?
Yeah. My wife, our four kids, and at the moment we have two ferrets and a cat.
Four kids, two ferrets, and a cat.
Yes.
How do you travel with two ferrets and a cat?
Well, the ferrets have a crate that they sleep in at night, and the cat has, he's got his litter box and other things, but they all like traveling. The ferrets are, they're They actually really like going places. So we have a little backpack that they go in. I got a couple of leashes for them. And, you know, the kids take them out to the park and they really like splash pads for whatever reason. So they take them to the splash pads and they run around and play and whatnot. They're really interesting little critters. It's like, if you've never had a ferret before, they're kind of like having a really strange cat that really likes to play.
Man, I bet you get some interesting looks in public.
We do.
Wow. Okay.
So... yeah, with
Conan the Barbarian had a ferret.
I know. And it used to be he's not my superhero. I have some others, but I like ferrets actually used to be a thing that royal families always had. So you see a lot of like pictures of royal families, like portraits of them, and they'll have their ferret in them. It was a sign of wealth and other things, you know, over the last couple thousand years. So
okay.
Yeah, they're interesting. Their job used to be hunting mice and rabbits and stuff. And so like your grandparents, for instance, would probably have hired a ferretmeister instead of like an exterminator. But then
do you have them there? Can we see them?
They are probably asleep somewhere. I don't know where they are.
Oh, wake them up.
I'd have to find them first. So that's one of the things. They free range like a cat does. So they run around and they only wake up in the mornings and the evenings. So they are probably in a drawer sleeping in someone's shirts and they'll wake up this evening.
Really?
Yeah. And they'll get all excited and want to play right around dinner time. And they'll play for a couple hours with the kids and us. And then, you know, they'll sleep all night and get up in the morning and do it again.
Okay. So I've heard this before. I've heard that ferrets smell.
Yeah. So they have a scent gland when they're born. And that's part of their heritage as a mouse and rat killer. The smell actually deters mice and rats. But nowadays, since they don't really have that job anymore, most of the time when you get a ferret, they get descented and the scent gland is removed. So they don't really smell any different than a cat or a dog. You know, a cat smells a little bit different than a dog, but so unless you get them wet, you can't really tell.
Okay. What are their names?
We have Hercules and Calypso.
Okay.
So my son, who's very into Greek mythology, named them. We had a different female ferret. And so it was Hercules and Xena, but Xena passed away. And so when we replaced them, because they're social, they need to be in pairs at least, we replaced the female ferret. Couldn't name her Xena again, so now she's named Calypso.
So you have ferret expertise. You have ferret expertise.
Yeah, basically. Only because we've had them for a few years now. And so, you know, travel with our ferrets. So
that's too cool.
Yeah, I like them.
You have like a Winnebago or something, or a travel trailer?
We have one of those big travel buses. So if you see the Class A motorhomes, they're flat on the front and the back and whatnot. It's got the slides on the sides and, you know, custom built triple bunks in it for the kids. I custom built my podcast studio here. So I got lights and this backdrop actually rolls up on the thing. And I've got a teleprompter here that I can see you and my questions.
Oh, you're in it now.
Yeah, we're in the RV now. I'm in the RV. We full-time travel. So we're always in the RV. Or
do you have a home?
We do not.
Oh. You live in that.
We do.
Okay.
So we are in the process of changing from RV travel to yacht travel. So we're working on finding a boat that we can have an office and other things in so we can start going port to port around the world with the kids. So.
Wow. Okay. 4 kids, 2 adults, 2 ferrets, 1 cat.
1 cat. The cat's new. We got the cat over Christmas. So he's a, he's a new
How's
addition.
How's that cat going on the boat?
He loves it. We adopted him from my brother. My brother doesn't have any kids. And this cat was one of several he owned that really wanted more attention than a single couple could provide for him, and moved over here with us. And he is in heaven because he's getting all the attention he could ever want from 4 kids.
I have a few more questions, Richard. I know this is about me, but by all means.
Yeah. You know, exchange of stories. That's what we're all here for.
What state are you in right now?
We're in Central Florida.
Okay. How long will you be there for?
We're going to be here for most of the summer. So we generally pause for the summer and then travel over the winter and go visit all sorts of places. And that's just because we have a community of friends and family and whatnot, and, you know, holidays and everything. We have plans with all of our friends.
Are you chasing warmth? Are you chasing climate?
Sometimes, yeah. We chase warmth. We've seen all the states in the country now. So generally when we're traveling, we're going to visit people. Okay. And that's why we're working on traveling, on transitioning to a boat, because we've seen all the things we want to see here in the U.S. So our continuing travels, we want to start getting into places we haven't been before and eat food we haven't eaten and speak languages we haven't spoken and that kind of stuff. See ferrets from other countries. I have no idea how that's going to go, actually, because like most of the places, like, they have rules for cats and dogs, but they don't always have rules for ferrets. Several states do, but a lot of them don't. So they're just like, yeah, we don't have rules for ferrets, whatever. And they just let you go. So we'll see how it goes when you get to the international waters. Maybe they'll be like, you know, you can't come into our country because you have ferrets. I don't know. We'll find out.
This is interesting.
Yeah, thank you. So we talked a little bit about your superpower is creativity, which, you know, one of the things we've talked about on this show before is traveling actually has some sort of an impact on creativity. We haven't really decided what it is yet, but it's something that we've, I have theories about, because our business has significantly grown since we started traveling 7 years ago. And I've been trying to figure out, like, what are some of the things about traveling that have allowed us to do that? And when we were flatlined a lot for many years before, and I don't exactly know what it is, but I have maybe an idea or two. One of them that, like, your routines get changed all the time. And so you're constantly sort of in that creative mind state of, like, you have to learn where the grocery stores are, and you have to learn where the gas stations are, and you have to figure out who the people you're going to hang out with are and introduce yourself to new people. And you're just sort of always in this, like, creative mind state because your lifestyle is forcing you to be there. And that seems to have had a rollover effect into our business.
Do you have another podcast that focuses on travel and your travel experiences?
I have the start of one. It's called Days Without Incident.
That seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah. I have 5 years of footage for that podcast that I have not gotten to putting together, but yes.
You need to get to it before it's too dated.
Yeah, yeah. So I need to hire someone to go through all of that footage and start turning it into a podcast for us, but yes.
Okay.
So, well, I want to change gears a little bit and talk about your fatal flaw, right? Every Superman has his kryptonite, or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad. So you probably have a flaw that's held you back in your business. For me, I struggled with perfectionism for a long time, still do sometimes, where, you know, keeps me from shipping product because I could always tweak it a little bit more before we take it out to market. And sometimes I also struggled with lack of self-care, which is like not having good boundaries with my clients, not having good boundaries with my time. And, you know, I experimented at one point with seeing what no sleeping would do to your work schedule. It's really bad, by the way. Don't do that. But I think more important than what the flaw is how have you worked to overcome it so you could continue to grow and especially get to the point where you're, you know, running a second generation company?
First of all, I want to know, how long did you go without sleep?
Managed to make it about 2.5 days before I was puking in the bushes. It was not good.
Puking
made me sick.
It did?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
I was in college at the time, and I figured if I had more time to work on things, you know, the best way to get more time was, no, I wasn't drinking. I don't drink.
We're doing drugs.
No drugs. It was just literally, let's see if I can work 24/7, 365, and I made it 2.5 days.
You puked.
And before it started making me sick.
You got sick.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine, I can answer this, I think, pretty easily. Mine's patience.
And how has that impacted your business for, like, learning how to be more patient, or, you know, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it takes, for me at least, I'll speak for myself, it takes years, or it's taken years to just identify what the thing is. The thing is, it's not working, that's not clicking between myself and the things and the people and things around me. And you realize that not everyone wants to work or can work at your speed or your level. And it's really just managing your own expectations and, you know, the reality of the world around you, and being okay with the fact that, you know, you don't have to do 5 and 6 things at once and complete them all. It's okay to have, you know, lists, and I have plenty of them all around me and behind me, but patience has been a big struggle. But it's been a lot better.
Yeah, I know. For me, patience is, like, it comes across in two different ways. The first one is patience to actually get a result in the company, right? Like, I think, you know, we're going to start this new project, we're going to go this new direction, or we're going to hit a new revenue target, and I'm like, we can do that in 6 weeks. It actually takes 6 months or 6 years. Right. And being patient enough to actually do the work and to show up and to not give up on things when, you know, what is it like, you know, 10 feet before you strike oil kind of thing, giving up before you get there, and having the patience to just, like, continue through and know that, like, if it's worth doing, it's worth taking the time to do. So that's the first one.
Well, with that comes managing your intensity levels.
Yeah.
For me, at least, you know, it's a matter of calibrating yourself to where you need to be. to again, match the people and things around you, because I can run hot, I can run quick, and that's okay with for me. And that's transparent to my clients, but, and I have coworkers and my business partner, she is the same way, but that doesn't mean that everyone's that way.
Yeah.
And it's easy, especially when you are in charge. That's the pitfall. It's easy to think that everyone can run at your speed. And you hear that a lot and you see that a lot, you know, working with other industries and with other companies, you can see that, you know, they push their people too much, or they don't push them enough, or they're harder on certain departments than they are on other departments. So it's a much, I guess, one thing I'm adding to this is it's as much learning about myself as it is watching other people and seeing how they operate and learning from them too.
Yeah, I know. It's one of the things that I still struggle with as an entrepreneur is realizing that, like, I operate at a certain speed, which is quite a bit faster than the normal people in the world, you know, which who are not non-entrepreneurs. And I find that's pretty common among, you know, our peers here in the entrepreneur space, is we tend to, what did you call it? Run hot, right? We can go fast, mm-hmm. and sometimes really fast, and operate a lot of, you know, that quickly. And then to manage your own expectations for what your people are capable of, because you definitely want to push them to be their best and to show up in the best way they can, but to realize that their speed limits are different than yours, and that's okay. Right. Because the reason you hire them is for the skills that they have that you don't. Right. And to see that, you know, sometimes for the speed, you're just going to have to hire more people to do the same work.
Or just, you know, just put a governor on yourself and just govern yourself differently so that your own expectations aren't, because a lot of the times that speed, you know, that pushes you or that pulls me, however you want to describe it, that's just between you and me. That's only you can feel that. Only I can feel that most of the time, you know, before it gets transferred into someone or something outside of ourselves, outside of you and me. First, it starts here with us. And I think it's being able to govern that and understand better how to self-control that, because at the end of the day, my internal speed isn't going to matter that much to anyone in the outside world. It's just going to stress me out.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one of the things that I talk about all the time is giving yourself permission to play, right? And taking some of that speed and other things that you have going for yourself and just being like, there's two things to that. It's like, I call it micro completions and permission to play, that you have a thing that you're going to get done that you can take from start to finish and just get completed. And then when you're done with that thing, take off. Right? Like, go do something that is not work related and use all of that energy you have to take care of yourself, to take care of your family, to take care of your friends and your community and that kind of stuff. And then show back up at work more refreshed and more creative.
You're just delaying your gratification. You're earning it. In other words,
yeah.
You know, it's no different than someone who doesn't have a drink until work is over. You know, they're going to earn the drink. They're going to earn the smoke. They're going to earn whatever it is, instead of, you know, satisfying themselves throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about your common enemy, right? And this has to do with your clients, but every superhero has an arch nemesis. It's the thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. And in the world of business, it takes on a lot of forms, but we'd like to talk in context of your clients, right? These are people that hire you for a specific result. And it's a mindset or a flaw that you have to constantly fight against so that you can actually get them the result that they came to you for in the first place. So in the world of, you know, large media advertising, creative and advertising, what is that common enemy for you guys?
It's probably no different than it is for anybody in business right now. And that's the fact that there's so much, or it feels like there's so much going on that's new and different and that deviates from what we used to do. And that's not just how we consume media. That's turning into how we shop for things, how we physically go places, how and what we drive to get there. You know, like you mentioned, the way, because of technology, you're able to, I don't want to say homeless, you're able to have
to vagabond.
Mobile home.
Yeah.
There you go. You're able to be a gypsy.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a derogatory term. If it is, I'm sorry. But you're able to live in an RV and travel with your family. You know, 15 years ago, you couldn't have done this show traveling the nation. Not the way you're doing it now, at least.
No, not at all. And like I said, we started 7 years ago, and it was significantly harder 7 years ago than it is today. It's the technology has dramatically changed what we're capable of doing.
And I think when the client has a lot of seemingly new information and new datas and new medias and new everything, that one, that spurs a lot of pop-up growth from new agencies. Mm-hmm. So now there's new types of agencies and different types of agencies. There's social media firms, there's TikTok only firms, there's, you know, you name it. So it's really easy, especially in times of change, and we're kind of coming out of one of those finally, I think in 2024, after, you know, 3 to 4 years of COVID and disruption. And I think anytime you're in a turbulent period like that, it makes it real easy for anyone, including ourselves on the agency side, to jump to any one conclusion, like that data can solve all of our problems, or every ad lead should correlate one-to-one with an advertising outbound message. Well, no, not always, you know. Ad revenue will never be 100% trackable, no matter what Meta tells you, or no matter what your friends down the street are telling you. And you're going to hear the stories about, oh, well, all I did was $50 a day in Google ads, and I grew my business by $13 million in 1 year. Okay, maybe that's what did it, but I'm guessing that's not going to work for everyone in your industry.
Yeah.
And not everyone's going to hit that gold vein and just...
It's one of those interesting things that I see a lot, because, you know, we work, I run a company that does podcast production. And so we have an agency in that space, and it's content creation, right? That's what we create, is we create content in the marketplace. And we have the same kind of like issue where people are like, you know, TikTok is here this year, it wasn't here last year. YouTube Shorts is here this year, and it wasn't here a couple of years ago. And, you know, Facebook Reels are really important now, and they weren't real important a little while ago. And, you know, and like every time something changes in the marketplace, people are like, oh, what do I need to know that I didn't know before? And the reality is like, podcasting is a storytelling platform, right? You have to learn how to tell stories. And the way that you tell stories doesn't change from generation to generation for all of human history, right? Like, the medium that we're using to tell stories might change. Right. Podcasting is really big now at what didn't exist 20 years ago. Right. That the medium that we use to tell stories doesn't change. And I think it's probably the same in advertising, where human buyer psychology hasn't ever changed. Right? We buy for same reasons. And it's just the methods that you might be using to get that message in front of the market changes. But like the baseline of like, how do you put together a message that convinces someone to buy is probably very similar today as it was 20 years ago.
Hasn't changed.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed. Well, it's all changed, but the foundation of how you get there has not. And that's media and creative. And being a full service agency, we like to say you have to have good media and good creative. Because if you have good media and bad creative, then all the right people saw a bad spot. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, you can have all the right people you could have all the wrong people see a good spot. So you really need your creative and media to complement each other, and they both need to be super strong and complement each other so that they're working hand in hand. They can't be disjointed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's never changed. But you're right. You know, something new comes along and it's okay, well, how do I maximize this? And now all of a sudden I'm going to jump onto this or latch onto this. But I'm going to do it by letting go of a legacy media, if you will, or letting go of something that you know has always worked, but your neighbor down the street's telling you he doesn't listen to radio anymore, who does, or, you know, watch TV as much, and they do more streaming. And that's all of us.
I always tell people that anyone who tells you insert marketing method is dead is trying to sell you another marketing method. Right. Email marketing.
Usually, if you have a hammer, everything's a nail. You know, I mean, and that's why. And then again, that's what makes being an objective full service agency valuable to clients and to clients who understand who and what that means. Because at the end of the day, we don't care what our clients buy. We'll tell them if we disagree. But if they're adamant on buying whatever the media is, then we'll do that. Because at the end of the day, they're the client. It's their money.
Do you guys get into any of the offline media, like billboards or direct mail or any of those kind of things, or is it all
out of home, as you might call it?
Yeah.
Yes, we sure do. You'll see a lot of samples of, especially our casino billboards. They're very cool.
Yeah.
You should check some of those out if you haven't. Yeah. They have big, giant 200, 300 pound icons that are built out, and we have a lot of full neon boards. You know, so you get to have a lot of fun when you can, but absolutely. Yeah. We do a lot of out of home.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just one of those things, like as a full service agency, you really get to see, like, you know, the agencies that specialize, like mine, right? Like we specialize in podcasting and that's all we do, that it's really easy to fall into that trap of like, the only thing you should do is podcasting because that's the thing that we sell, which isn't true, of course, because like, you know, we actually, as a podcasting agency, use direct mail to drive clients, right? And we use cold email.
Really?
Yeah, we do. And it's interesting that, like, you know, podcasting is certainly a powerful medium, but it's not the only one that's available. And there's so much that goes into, like, as I've learned to grow my company, we are actively looking at every channel that's available that we put media into to drive leads for our own company. And so I think one of the things that's unique about us is the fact that we specialize in what we do is I'm talking to our clients about, like, hey, podcasting should be a part of a much larger, like, thing that you're doing, right? And how does it fit into your direct mail strategy? And how does it fit into your email strategy and your pay-per-click strategy and your TV marketing strategy and all those kind of things? Like, they should all be sort of a part of this whole, and you're using the pieces you have available to you, you know, assuming your market is there, right? Like, you know, if you don't have a local presence, what good's the billboard kind of thing, right? But, you know, as long as you can reach your market with that medium, you should probably have some sort of strategy to be using it to grow your business.
How long have you been listening to podcasts?
15 years.
Okay. What were some of the first ones you started listening to?
The Tim Ferriss podcast was probably one of the first ones that I listened to, way back in 2007, I think. I picked up his book on the 4-hour work week, and I sort of became obsessed with building systems and whatnot. His was one of the first podcasts I listened to.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
So yeah, you started early.
How about you? Was it one of the first podcasts you listened to?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, UHHYEAHDUDE.
And what's that one about?
It's here. It's Jonathan Larroquette and Seth Romitelli. I think I have. Oh, I do have it. My UID pin.
Nice.
They have a merch store. I'm very loyal to their brand and to their podcast. But it's just two guys talking about. Oh, look, and I have my own pins. I like flair.
There you go.
Do you have flair for your podcast?
We don't. I need flair, but we should totally get some. I have
email me and I'll send you pins.
I have an idea. We have access to 3D printer, and you can get, I don't know if you've seen these Funko Pops. You can get custom designed Funko Pops. I'm going to start making Funko Pops for all of my guests and like send it to them. Like, here's a little like a hero, like a superhero version of yourself to put on your desk.
Or call Funko and have them make them for you. That would be cool.
That would be cool. So awesome. So I want to flip side of the common enemy is your driving force, right? So if your common enemy is what you fight against, your driving force is what you fight for. So just like Spider-Man fights to save New York, or Batman fights to save Gotham, or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information. What is it that you guys fight for at Fasonian Partners? Your mission, so to speak.
Results.
So what does that mean in the advertising world?
It means my clients win.
So they beat their competitors and get all the leads in the marketplace.
Sometimes it's not about competition. Sometimes it's about beating your own goals, mm-hmm. or exceeding your own margins. And yeah, sometimes it's about the competition. And sometimes it's just about having a really good sales period. Sometimes it's just as simple as doing better than you did year over day. Because when they win, we win. And when they win, my vendors win. And when my vendors win and my client wins, I win. And that's our philosophy, is do the right thing for our vendors, ourselves, and our clients.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when we do that, we can create, you know, a multi-decade relationship with our clients. And we can create a relationship of total transparency where there's nothing to hide, whether it's fees or the way we work or the way we communicate. And yeah, the driving force is winning. It's an internal feeling, obviously, and it's an internal win too, because it's not public. It's not like you get an award for every time you win something, or that you, you know, you get to pat yourself on the back, and that's what we work for.
So when you start relationships with clients, do you find out what the win metric is? Because you mentioned several things, everything from year-over-year growth or beating the competition or getting leads. So it's like different for every client.
Absolutely have to. No different than you, you know, dealing with a family of, what is there? There's seven of you, including all the creatures.
There's six of us and the creatures, yeah.
You have to listen, you know, as being a father, as being dad, you have to listen to the people around you. I'd imagine, I don't know, I'm not a parent.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, I mean that, you know, and of course, so you have to listen to your client. You have to figure out, what are your challenges, Mr. Client? What are your pain points? Who do you think you are and who do you want to be? And who do you think your competition is? Who do you think they're trying to be? You know, what are the realistic goals? What are the non-realistic goals? And that's the wrong way to phrase that. But, you know, what's the immediate goal? Okay, great. We need to sell more trucks in the month of March because that's truck month. Or we need more coin in the summer months at our casinos because it's summer and we should have higher traffic. And then what's our long-term goal? You know, 3 to 5 years out, we want to have our website function in a different way than it functions today. Or we want to grow into a second and third location. Just met with a client last week that's opening up a second location here in the greater Kansas City metro area on the Kansas side. If you don't know anything about Kansas City, that's okay. Just know that we straddle Kansas and Missouri, but we're called Kansas City, Missouri. So,
yeah. I had a best friend in college that lived there. So we were there all the time. So I'm familiar with the split there.
But you know, it's just figuring out what's the immediate goal in need? What's the long range goal in need? And work towards both of those while at the same time managing the expectations of your clients, because the client isn't always one person. You know, one client can be 4 to 6 people.
Yeah.
That you have to, you know, manage personalities, manage expectations, know their hierarchy within the 4 to 6 of them and how to communicate with them.
So I have an interesting question that sort of pops up. So as an advertising agency, you guys drive business. And so one of the things I know is operations can sometimes be a limiting factor on your ability to drive business. So as an advertising agency, when you're talking about winning, do you ever run into the problem of being able to out-advertise a business's ability to deliver? And if so, how do you manage that as an agency?
Yes. So COVID is a good example of that. You had businesses that had too much market share. There was too much market and they couldn't get to them fast enough. And you saw a lot of that in home services, home remodeling, home improvement, windows, siding, bathrooms, kitchens. That type of industry had too much market share and they couldn't get to them quick enough. I had clients calling me and pulling dollars and shifting dollars because they were booked so far out. You know, hey, Richard, I'm booked 6 weeks out. I can't take on any more leads. To the point where the advertising was choking them to where they couldn't hire enough. They couldn't hire and train fast enough to keep up with the inbound leads. And that's not unique to me or my agency in this last 3 to 5 years. You know, COVID, that brought on that challenge specific to most every industry. Then you had other industries where automotive, for example, where they couldn't create the product fast enough to fuel the demand. So you had it across. It was a great time. Yeah. But, you know, you had industries that had too much market share and could barely keep their clients fulfilled or customers fulfilled. Then you had other ones that couldn't fulfill their customers because they couldn't get product and services in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So as an advertising agency, how do you manage that to help the clients continue to win?
So you become the client. And that's what we do every day is we act, we think, and we perform like the client. Because what we didn't do during those times, during that time, during this time, because it's still lingering here in May 2024, is you cancel monies, you shift monies, you move monies. What you don't do, or at least what we don't do at Fasonian Partners, is say, sorry, we booked an annual contract with you. You have to keep your buy, or I'm going to bill you my commission and bill you for the main, whatever, my hours. And could potentially burn that relationship as well. Versus standing by that client saying, okay, Richard, I get it. You have too many guests and you need to pull back. Well, let's pull back, you know, because in a few years, you're going to remember that Michael Fassoni was there for you and he canceled X amount of dollars and shifted his creative and did all of this, you know, again, agility and experience, was able to pivot with me versus just saying, well, sorry, we did this, we negotiated this, we planned on this, we bought it, I already have the hours in it, I need to get paid.
Yeah.
That'd be very easy to run my agency that way, for my partner and I to run our agency that way. That'd be the easy way to do things. And it would actually be more profitable. But that's not how the agency was founded. That's not how my father built it. So that's not how we run it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably one of the reasons why you are a multi-generational agency is because you have that sort of flexibility and the ability to adapt to the marketplace as, you know, as it becomes more difficult or more simple to win.
Yeah. We pick up a lot of clients from agencies our size and larger, rarely smaller, who run into that situation. Well, why are you leaving this other agency? They're a very good agency. We're glad you're here talking to us. But what happened in that relationship? Well, we found out they were charging us a quarterly fee on top of a retainer fee on top of, we don't do that. Or, you know, they made them a new commercial and decided they were going to retain ownership rights for whatever reason. Or they wouldn't let them back out of a media contract, which any media contract is easily cancelable. But if you want to, you can tell your client it's not. We don't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it gives you that longevity and the trust in the relationship.
It does. It also gives me a lot of risk.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you understand what's on the other side of that risk, that loyalty usually follows that type of mentality, then you're okay.
Yeah, it pencils out to the positive.
Not all ferrets are smelly.
So you can remove the scent gland. I like it. Good callback. So I want to talk, you know, practical portion of our show. We call this the Hero's Tool Belt. And just like every superhero has their awesome gadgets like batarangs or web slingers or laser eyes or a big magical hammer they can spin around and fly with, I want to talk about the top one. Or there you go. He's got his Nerf gun. Top one or two tools you couldn't live without in your business. Could be anything from your notepad, your calendar, something you use for marketing tools, something you think is essential to getting your job done today. He's like, it's my Nerf gun.
Well, it is. And my Nerf ammo. Have my ammo, kitty. Okay, no, but seriously, let me answer your question. My pen, my pink highlighter, my other pen.
And what do you do with those?
I take a lot of notes, Richard.
So
I write a lot. I still write a lot on paper. I like it.
My wife.
I have an iPad. I have an iBook. I have a MacBook. I have like four computers, but I prefer to write.
Yeah, my wife and you would get along well. She likes to write all of her stuff down and all of her planner stuff. And I'm like, you know, it'd be easier if you put it on your phone, right? And she's like, nope, it's way easier on the piece of paper. And I can't do it. I can't write on a piece of paper. If I write on paper, it's gone. Like I've lost.
That's because you're young. How old are you?
38.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. 45. So
yeah,
you're at that threshold.
Yeah, right on the edge of digital versus not. And man, my wife's a couple years younger than me, and she is all paper all the time. She's got a whole bullet journal she keeps all her stuff in. And so yeah, I get that. But is that what kind of things are you generally working on? Like business plans or your like internal stuff or projects for your clients? Or what's your use case?
It's everything in between. I can give you today for an example. Today I'm scripting, working on some scripts. I'm getting some spots sent out for approval to a client. I have some calls to make. I have some calls to receive. I have this. I have your podcast. I have my own podcast. What am I doing with my tools as I'm taking them with me everywhere I go usually?
So I guess what pops into my head is, as you said, your team is about 10 people. Do you find yourself still working, like wearing all the hats every once in a while, doing some of the creative, doing some of the production, doing some of the media buys? Do you do a little bit of everything, or do you manage it from the top?
I get my hands dirty.
So is that something that's intentional, or are you planning to grow out of that, or what's your sort of goal there?
I never want to, if I grow out of it, it'll be because it just happens. Mm-hmm. That's not the intent. I enjoy waking up and working every day.
Yeah.
I enjoy what I do. I'm not doing it just to do it. I don't have to. But to directly answer your question, You know, like, for example, right now we have, I have a copywriter producer who's been out sick for a while, and it looks like he may be out for a lot longer than anticipated. I will take on his workload, which means I will be writing more and producing more. So no, I absorb, we all do. When you're as small as we are, you have to be able to pivot internally. And, you know, and it comes down to constant communication and how we communicate internally as a group. We do work in office. We do not work remotely. I think that helps. And that the way that we meet once a week, we meet on Wednesday mornings as an entire group, just to kind of go over every single account and all the moving pieces of each one. That way we're all on the same page midweek as a group. But yeah, does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love that we are, you know, we are a remote team, obviously, because I travel and we've got team members in several different countries and several different states. And so we do a biweekly meeting that where everyone gets together and we do conference call kind of stuff. And learning how to manage communication is definitely it's a thing that is constantly being worked on and trying to be improved so that we can manage as a company our size remotely.
How big is your company?
We just hired employee number 18.
Okay. So, and you manage multiple podcast platforms, or the Hero Podcast is the main?
We have the Hero Podcast is a client of ours, right? So I am a client of our agency, and we have 30 different podcasts right now. We're in the process of trying to get up to 50. And then hopefully by the end of the year, we want to have 100 shows under management.
So you work for an agency that manages podcasts?
Yeah. Yeah. So the company is called Push Button Podcasts, and
they would love my podcast.
Probably. So yeah, we could talk more about that if you want. But yeah, we manage a lot of shows in a lot of different industries, and
I got a sticker right here.
There we go. Was it the little agency that roars? I love that. So self-promotion for the podcast. If you haven't checked it out yet, The Little Agency That Roars. We'll get links to it in the bio. So yeah.
Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built that powers the Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
I have one more question for you here, and it's about your guiding principles, right? One of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever brings them to Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one or maybe two principles that you use regularly in your life that you run your business by. Maybe something you wish you'd known when you first started out as a production assistant.
I would say, I'll just repeat what I said earlier, because that's, I think if anyone had one answer to that, that would be short-sighted, because in our industry, at least, you're never done learning. And if you are, then you've made a mistake. Or if you think you have accomplished it, you've made a very grave mistake on behalf of yourself and the people around you. But I would say it's just doing the right thing, just waking up. And, you know, I always say that, you know, I could have done anything in my life. I could have been an artist. I could have gone into acting. I could have been in it. I could have sold this company the chance to buy it instead of owning it. I could have sold it. But I saw a chance to do something pure and for the client, and that operates under the foundation of do the right thing. And like I said earlier, when you do the right thing for yourself, your vendor, and your client, you win, your client wins, and your vendor wins. And when you create that cycle of when your vendor can win and your client wins and you win, then you create a circle that should never really stop. And when I saw a chance to lead that, that's really the guiding principle, because it's nothing about me or her, my partner, my business partner, Carol. It's about the client. And the minute it stops being about the client and it starts being about money, drop my pen, it starts being about money, your view of what the creative should be, ego, guilty, you know, the process, patience, impatience. When it starts to become something about that, then you maybe should go look for another job or be in another industry. Because what I've seen in the 25 years I've been in the industry, let alone the 50 that my agency has been around, next year will be our 50th year, is that when you're client focused, you will win 100% of the time. You're going to lose a lot too, but at least if you, out of the gate, your approach, you never have to second guess yourself. You're never going to have to, you know, you hear people say, or maybe you've heard the saying before, I don't tell lies because if I lie, I have to remember a lie. As long as I'm telling the truth, I don't have to remember anything. And I'm not correlated the two, but when I approach the business of doing the right thing, instead of approaching business with it being about money or about me or about who my people are or where they are or what they are or the campaign that we ran, that campaign, that should be the client's campaign, not something I'm doing for my own brag reel. And that happens a lot in our industry. You know, sometimes the creative isn't done for the client or the consumer. It's done for the agency.
Yeah.
So that they can put that on a brag reel, so that they can go get an Addy or get an Omni or get whatever the award may be, a Clio, you name it. We don't do that. So it's just a way of simplifying your mindset and your power skill set, and a really easy way to organize the people around you and to remind everyone that the bottom line will follow. But if we can stick to our core principles of who we are as humans and people, no matter what we are, then we'll get there. But it's getting there and mitigating all of those things that get in our way, like impatience, being able to go twice as fast as most people, being overly worried, overly cautious, whatever it is, and making sure that doesn't bleed out to the people around you. Negativity, ego, I know I mentioned that. So it's really just staying true to what and who your company is and should be.
Yeah, so learning how to just operate from that place of integrity and that win-win-win scenario, and always striving to learn and be better and to grow. And I always like that metaphor of a shark. A shark can never stop moving, because if it stops moving, it dies, right? Like, we have that same kind of thing, right? You always have to be learning and growing, or otherwise you're dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I think that's a great place to wrap our interview with that sort of thought. But I do finish every interview with a simple challenge. And that is basically, we call it the Heroes Challenge. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
Of course I do. They're not going to do it. But I'm very good friends with someone who owns the patent to, if I say the patent, you'll figure out who they are, but I'm very good friends with someone who holds a very nice patent that they sold to 3M, and they have a really neat story.
That'd be cool. Well, maybe we can at least ask. I don't know if they'll say yes, but sometimes we get cool stories out of that. But, you know, in comic books, there's always the crowd of people who are cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So as we close, I always like to find out, where can people light up the bat signal, so to speak, and ask for your help, right? And who are the right types of people to ask for that help?
Just call me.
Do you have a number you want us to put on the screen here for people?
Sure. Call 816-753-7272. Ask for Michael Fasoni.
And who are the right types of businesses to reach out, like to ask for your help there?
Anybody who needs more traffic or more business. Or someone who doesn't need more traffic or more business, but knows that some part of their business could be better, whether it's the creative, the media, their training guides, their white papers, their outdoor, their brochures. If they own a restaurant, maybe they hate the way their menu's designed. Maybe it's just an interior designer who needs new business cards. No project is too small. No project is too big.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Michael. Really appreciate your time and just getting to hear your story. Do you have any final words of wisdom for my audience before I hit this stop record button?
I do not. I appreciate you having me, Richard, and I thank you.
Thank you for being here, Michael.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.